Did you both get up for the Japanese Grand Prix? I did.
I wish
I hadn't. I really wish I hadn't.
No, I was in a hotel, the worst hotel I've ever been in at EMA for the British GT. So I woke up maybe 20 laps to go and watched it on my phone. So no, I missed it, but I gathered that I didn't really miss anything.
You missed nothing.
I just think maybe waking up later, but still watching 20 laps to the end is probably worse than watching the whole thing. I don't know. Because you've joined halfway through nothing to watch nothing.
Yeah, I was trying to... So when I joined at 20 laps on the end, it was relatively close. We had the two McLarens kind of vaguely closing on Max. And it gave me the impression that I was like, oh, this is building up to something. And in reality, it hadn't been building up to anything. That appeared to be the entire race. So it was what? Green flag, pit stops, Lando's off the road, finish. That's it.
Essentially, yeah. I think we've said it before here as well. You don't need a race to be constant overtaking to be good. You just need it to have the threat of the overtake. This never even had that, despite the cars running so close together. It just never looked like the McLarens were in a position to actually overtake Max. But there was only one overtake in the entire top 10 for the entire Grand Prix. And that was Lewis overtaking Isaac Hadjar on lap 5, I think it was. And that was the only overtake in the top 10. So, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't it something like the top 6? It was the first time on a road course that the top 6 from qualifying finished in the same order.
Correct, yeah. It's the fourth time in F1 history it's happened, and the first time it's happened on a permanent race circuit. So
That's pretty grim. I don't think we've ever sat and talked about whether Suzuka produces good races or not. Like, the traditional ones that we talk about for that are always Barcelona and Hungaroring, but I don't really have this concept of Suzuka being a good or a bad circuit for racing in my head.
It was something I thought about, that I think if they announced tomorrow that Suzuka is forever cancelled, there'd be uproar. And it is holding some high regard. But then you watch the race and you think, why? It's a great driving track, great challenge. There's been a lot of historic moments in there with like the title deciders and things like that. But especially as a third race of the season, there is no positive for it, really, I didn't think. Because even the DRS struggled. They can't have the DRS on the back straight because 130R is flat, and you might get some nuts to try and do it flat with DRS open. But then, because of the way Turn 1 works...
do we want to ask Jack Goon about his opinion on that?
But then you got the DRS in Turn 1, and then that puts them right on the tail into Turn 2, and then they go into the S's where they can't follow. So then it's completely hopeless that way. So it is quite funny that the track's designed anti-DRS, despite it being several tens of years older than DRS. But one thing I thought about as well, just to try and forge some sort of conversation, is Lance Stroll has a terrible record at Suzuka. Like, not just this race, but the past few years he's been at the back. And it is like, is it such a driver's track that it highlights poor drivers as such in a way, to word that better? Is that the effect of it being Lance Stroll at Suzuka that he just can't drive it? Or is it Lance Stroll just doesn't care about Suzuka? Or
I mean, for context, he was everybody finished. There wasn't a single yellow flag in the entire race. And Lance Stroll finished a lap down, and he was the only driver to be lapped.
There's actually some good stories to talk about with the results, even if the racing wasn't that interesting. So as somebody who missed it, did papaya rules get talked about at any point for the two McLarens? Because you can't have two teammates running that close and have both of them silent on the radio.
Oscar was very vocal. He very much seemed to be of the opinion that they should let him have a go at Max. He was told that this is Lando's pace. That was taken to mean at the time that this is as fast as Lando's going, but I think afterwards it's emerged that Lando was hitting a pace target that had been set by the team. They were looking for him to save his tyres and then hopefully have an attack at Max at the end of the race, but the tyre degradation was just non-existent, and Max's tyres never even went off either. I think Lando was just staying out of Max's dirty air, basically protect his own tyres, whereas Oscar was a bit more willing to sort of push up behind Lando to try and prove his point.
Just kind of summing up those two drivers there, isn't it? It's like Lando's not quite on it and Oscar's wanting a go.
Yeah, I don't think it had made any difference if it had swapped them. I don't think Oscar would have got past Max. I think Max had enough in reserve. You needed about 1.5 seconds pace advantage to overtake at Suzuka. And even that Red Bull's not 1.5 seconds a lap slower than the McLaren. So it was just never going to happen, I don't think. So, yeah. There's a bit of noise made about it, but I don't think it will come to anything.
Yeah, I think at the time I was frustrated and I wanted them to swap the drivers and let Oscar at least try and put some pressure on Max, if anything. And it felt like a bit of a cop-out with them just saying, this is Lando's pace, we're holding it. But I think, like you say, Sim, when you look at the grander picture, and it does make sad sense, really.
The other talking point, before we come onto the obvious one of the Red Bulls, was Jack Doohan having a nightmare of a weekend to start with, but it looks like it finished kind of all right. 2 places behind Gasly, 20 seconds off his teammate, after not getting FP1 because Hirakawa got a shot in his car. And then as soon as Jack got in it, he stuffed it in the wall at turn one. So by the end of the weekend, kind of looks like he did all right, to be honest.
He was anonymous. I don't think
I can't say anything about his race.
Yeah, I don't think he's done enough to keep his seat. The rumours of Colapinto, who I believe tested the car after Suzuka, are still floating around as well. So
they really hate Jack Doohan at Alpine, don't they?
In fact, Jack Doohan's, he's helping them hate him. He's hardly...
So what was the debate about the Turn 1 incident? No, so he went into Turn 1 with DRS open, and obviously immediately had a massive accident, but apparently he did it on the simulator, so
yeah. He
felt that the car should be able to do it. I don't know quite enough about the simulators and whether you're simulating things like fuel load and heat into the tires and heat into the brakes and all that good stuff, but it didn't even look close, his accident. It was as soon as he turned into the corner, the car immediately switched ends. I kind of wish we had Nick here to discuss simulators, but it feels like something's massively miscalibrated somewhere if you could do it easy in the simulator and then you immediately have a massive accident in real life if you try the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, Nick is more the expert on this. It depends what you're using the simulator for, whether you're using it as a driver training tool or a car development tool. If you're using it as a car development tool, generally you won't have stuff like tyre heat modelling or fuel loads, because you want, the idea of the simulation is that every lap can be exactly the same conditions. So you can change things and it's back-to-back perfect. The only variable is what you've changed. I imagine if you're using it for driver training, you do want a bit of that in so they get used to it. So yeah, did Jack try, you know, DRS open on the simulator with 5-lap old tyres that are nice and warmed up on a completely rubbered-in track? Whereas obviously Suzuka had been resurfaced before the race. I think this was the first major race there since the resurfacing, green track, only FP2 as well. There's not a lot of rubber build up, and it's just, you know. But those are the things that, if you've made it to F1, those are the things I think you should be, you know, well aware of and considering.
I mean, surely at the very least, you think, has anybody else done it? And if nobody else has done it, is there a reason for that? It's I don't know whether to like admire the brains or the balls to think, I'm in an F1 car at Suzuka and I'm going to turn one with my DRS open. Whether it's admirable or, like, just so stupid.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well, because, I mean, Jack Villeneuve was on commentary. And one of the things he's lauded for is 1999, where he crashed his BAR going for Eau Rouge. And when asked what happened, he said, we just had a bet of whether I could take it flat or not, and it turns out I can't. that's Jackfield, that is brilliant. But, you know, Doohan, I tried to take it flat and I couldn't. Everyone's like, oh, you're such a moron. What are you trying that for?
If you're using Jacques Villeneuve to defend yourself as a moron, then you're at some level there.
I heard about 10 minutes of his commentary and it was painful, to say the least. Can we not do that again? Can we not have Jacques in the booth again?
It made me wish Nico Rosberg was there.
Oh, he was significant. I believe Anthony Davidson was at the circuit. Could we not have had Anthony Davidson? Significant.
He did speak
better.
A few bits.
Yeah. It was a very, very odd choice.
I got off for qualifying as well, and I turned it on, and I was a bit, like, bleary-eyed. And I thought, oh, it's Nico Rosberg. And I was like, that's not Nico Rosberg. Who is that? Like, I couldn't pick it up until, like, Crotty went, Jack. And I was like, oh.
I wonder how that discussion came about. It's not like he's been anywhere near the Sky TV. I know he does the Canadian one and things like that. He's not been anywhere near the Sky TV booth. What set of conversations had to happen that they went, Jack's the man for this? Oh, I don't know. Can we just not do that again? It was maybe 10 minutes and it was awful.
We need some North American presence. James Hinchcliffe is taken and Danica Patrick's currently talking about lizard people. So
I'm not sure if that's better or worse than Jack. At least he was talking. At one point, did Jack not say something like, oh, I I didn't say anything because I was watching it. I was like, so yeah, this so your job to say something.
Yeah, Crofty did his usual. Crofty did his usual, I'll pass to the racing driver to commentate a lap of the track, which is, you know, fair enough. And Jack was just silent. And like, oh, no, I'm sorry, I was watching. So you're being paid to talk about it.
I did think of points as well. It was like he was trying to like audition to be a steward. There was a couple of times people had like went off at the chicane at the end, and he was like, oh, it looks like he might have gained an advantage there, or, oh, no, he definitely didn't gain an advantage. And then he's like talking about track limits at every single opportunity as well. So, oh, that's going to be deleted. Oh, it's not been deleted. Like, it was bizarre.
He'd make it Derek Warwick look like the greatest steward of all time, remembering that this is the gentleman who said that they should remove mirrors from Formula One cars because you don't need them. And he wanted to drive his car with a joypad at one point in 1997. It's like, oh, God, can you imagine him in the steward's room? He'd have opinions, for sure. And the last storyline has got to be, what happened at Red Bull? Why is Yuki Tsunoda 30 seconds up the road from Liam Lawson?
Oh, I thought you were going to go the other way.
Well, no, I think the other way is explainable. Max Verstappen won the race. Okay, fair enough. Isaac Hadjar was second in a car that might be better than the Red Bull. Don't know, whatever. But you can see that happening. You can see Hadjar getting a point or two. Cool, fine. There's no way Yuki should be beating Liam Lawson given the narrative that has been the first couple of races. Has Yuki just ended another career?
It's looking that way. I'd say Yuki was a bit unlucky because I think he messed up his Q2 lap as well. In Q1, he was only a couple of attempts behind Max, and then he was slower in Q2 than his Q1 lap, I believe. So, yeah, just a bit of tyre prep gone wrong there. But you know what? First race in the Red Bull. He didn't have any pre-season testing in that car. I think he's going to be all right. It's really annoying because it's made me really want to support that particular Red Bull, that part of Red Bull, that one seat, that one car. Red Bull, I want to do well. The rest of them can, you know, disappear.
I think there's a bit of I told you so in this, isn't there? It's like, I think we want to support it because for the last 2 or 3 years, we've been saying, well, it's at least his turn.
Yeah.
Like, even if he doesn't deserve it on pure like, driving ability, it's like it's only fair that it's his turn. And they've really, really done their best to keep him out of it. And he's ended up in his first time in the car 4 seconds off the points, whereas Lawson was qualifying and finishing last in races. So, yeah, told you so.
Thank you. You've justified that in my mind now. I'm supporting the fact that Horner and Marco were wrong rather than the fact that Yuki's doing well. I can live with that.
Yeah. You just got to. It's all about the framing. That's all it is. Just got to frame it correctly. And yeah, I think Yuki's been treated quite unfairly for the last couple of years, whereas everybody else has been given a go in the Red Bull when I think it was obvious to most of the world that they shouldn't have been. Like, Ricardo should never have been in contention for it, and he was brought back just because they wanted to put him in there. De Vries, they obviously wanted to put him in. Yuki ended those careers. He was in line for it with Sergio qualifying last, and it's like, no, we'll just put Liam Lawson in it based on nothing but vibes, apparently. And that's gone really well. So, yeah, it's Yuki's turn. By the look of it, he's done very, very well in a first go. Put it this way, if Lawson had been doing that, we wouldn't have been discussing him getting replaced.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do they do now? Do you keep Yuki in?
I think if Hadjar beats him in Bahrain, I believe it's Hadjar's turn at Jeddah. I think that's how it's working, isn't it?
The way you said that, I can actually believe it.
It's going to be some Red Bull juniors in Formula 2 rubbing their hands together thinking that they're going to be in one of the racing bulls by the end of the year because Liam's not going to lie. You can't be 17th whilst your teammate is 8th. That's not how it works.
To be fair, if you win an F2 race, you've probably beat Lawson, so...
It's so bad. How did it go so badly wrong? How did he go from... It wasn't that bad last year. He was fine. Shouldn't have been put in the Red Bull. But how did it go so badly wrong? Is this just the way Red Bull treat drivers? I don't understand what's gone on there.
Well, Suzuka was basically the big opportunity for Lawson as well, wasn't it? Because he knows the track, he's raced there before, etc. And even with a set of softs on, right at the end, he still did nothing.
Was he a Super Formula graduate? Is he one of those ones that came through that? Yeah.
Yeah, and he's done two F1 Grand Prix here as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, kind of forgot that. Yeah, we're kind of at the point of whether he should be discussed as a rookie or not, really, isn't he?
Kind of a small last point, though. Again, with Max winning the race relatively comfortably, so when he took pole, I thought, oh, he's just ragged everything out of that car. It's not going to maintain that for a race. And it never really looked at risk for him at all. But then you look at first, second, and third, 2.1 seconds, and then it's another 14 seconds to fourth, and that's crazy, like such a big gap from the two McLarens and Max over the rest of the field. Where is that Red Bull car really? Like, obviously it's the hands of Max, it's at another level, but that's such a huge gap.
The results are an interesting one, though, because, like, yes, there's 16 seconds between Max and Leclerc, but then between Leclerc in fourth down to Kimi in sixth, they're all bunched up again. So you kind of get the impression there that Leclerc was a blocker on the two Mercedes and they were probably faster, but nobody could overtake. So they were just stuck.
I think it was that because George messed up his quali lap and Kimi struggled learning the track. And actually, apparently he spent a few hours sat down with Bottas, who spent some time coaching him through the various lines and stuff like that he should be taking, and that flipped a switch in Kimi's head. But yeah, I think realistically the Mercedes were faster than Ferrari, but Charles got a qualifying position on them and therefore, yeah, was able to keep him behind the majority of the race, or the entirety of the race, the same way as Max. Max nailed his quali lap, both McLarens cocked theirs up, and then, yeah, he was able to hold it into turn one and then dictate the pace as he saw fit for the rest of the Grand Prix.
I'm just looking at the Drivers' Championship standings because I was going to ask, do we think this changes how we look at the championship? Lando has a 1-point lead over Max. How did this happen?
The honest answer to that is the sprint race where Max finished second and Lando, I think he either scored 1 point or no points. And so because those two have just been finishing first, second, second, first, you know, a gap of 7 points between first and second, it just means the sprint race, Max was able to pretty much entirely close the gap back up.
This is a classic Red Bull, isn't it? Of they're just going to keep hammering points in and see where they end up. I don't think he's out of it as much as discussed after the first two races.
No, I'd agree with that. People are saying, oh, it's like the fifth, sixth fastest car behind the Racing Bulls and potentially the Williams, and it's just Max dragging it up. I think the reality is more it's probably the second to fourth fastest car on any given weekend.
I think it has the potential to be the second fastest car if they can get it in the window, I think is what it really is, isn't it? I think it's a bit silly to say it's slower than the Williams or Aston Martin. I don't think that's realistic, to be honest. But the Mercedes, the McLaren, obviously, the Mercedes and Ferrari, I think it really just depends on them getting it absolutely nailed, doesn't it? And I think you would have a lot of faith in Max being able to get the most out of it if they get it 90% of the way there, whereas the other drivers appear to struggle with it. Liam struggled with it the most, obviously. So, yeah, I don't think it's that bad a car. It's not that good a car, but I don't think it's that bad a car either.
No, I'd agree with that.
I think it's what you consider slow, isn't it? Because I think when especially in the hands of Max, when the Red Bull's in the window, which seems to be a very modern F1 term, it is clearly fast. It wins races. But that window is so small that when it's not in that window, it's obviously clearly very difficult. Then, which obviously, that's when you'd call it a slow car. So, yeah, I think if every team's in that ideal window, maybe it's like kind of, like you say, second to fourth at worst, but it's just maintaining that and getting it right for both drivers.
I think one of the issues that they've got is the Mercedes and the Ferrari are really close together, and to an extent, the Williams as well. So when it's slightly out of the window, you don't just drop one or two positions to the McLarens and maybe a Mercedes. You drop like four to six. So like on a bad day, the Red Bull's dropping a lot. I think might be its issue. It's like it doesn't actually have to be that far off in terms of speed, and then suddenly use a lot. And the grid's really close this year. It's like I remember looking at when Liam was last, and he was like something like 1.8 seconds off a pole, and you're like, and that's last. That's insane. So, like, there is that should probably come up in the Liam discussions as well. Of yes, it is a very difficult car to drive outside the window, and it's also the closest the grid's ever been, and that's not helping the situation. That's probably where Max is going to drop the most points, isn't it? Is when they have a bad weekend and suddenly he finds himself eighth. And in reality, he's not actually that slow. It's just you end up with Mercedes and Ferraris ahead of him.
Aside from the race, there's an important vote taking place this weekend on whether F1 should ditch its 2026 rules and go back to V10s.
Well, I think we all know the result of that is going to be no, they should keep the 2026. Today we're talking about 2026 engine rules specifically.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
Who gets to vote?
So it's the engine manufacturers, and apparently 4 of the 5 engine manufacturers need to agree. And currently only Ferrari and Red Bull are in favour. Mercedes and Audi are against. And then, Honda have not said either way.
So that's Red Bull and Ferrari, did you say, are in favour of dropping the rules to go to V10s?
Are thought to be in favour of it, yes.
Okay. That to me makes sense. Because Ferrari makes supercars. They're not particularly interested in the miles per gallon on hybrids and all that. I know they are producing hybrids, but it feels more like it's a legislative thing rather than they want to do it.
Yeah.
Ferrari want to produce big, dirty V12s and things like that. So I can see why Ferrari are for it. Red Bull are an interesting one because they build their own engines for their cars. They're not building road cars. They're not transferring road car technology. I know we've got Ford coming. We're not going to discuss that because Ford seem to flirt with F1 constantly. Yeah. So they're in it for the sporting aspect only. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of in their interest to have a big screaming car that's interesting to watch and listen to, I guess. So yeah, I can see that. And I can see why the other three are not, because they produce road cars and they want road relevant technology to sell the road cars. So those rumors feel like sensible. There's nothing wrong with those.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So I know there's a difference of opinion on the panel as well, isn't there, really? Dave, I think you're very much in favour of returning to V10s.
I wouldn't say I'm in favour of V10s. I'm in favour of bigger, noisier engines.
Okay.
And not necessarily against hybrid. My favourite cars would be the LMP1 hybrids that we had when they were mad. I'm just in favour of big screaming cars rather than muted turbocharged V6s.
See, this is... I'm not against V10s, and they sound brilliant, but I don't think F1 should go back to them. And whenever anybody talks about why we should go back to V10s, everyone says the sound. And that is a great part. How many Grand Prix have you been to, Dave?
No Formula One races, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much anybody who says that has been to no Grand Prix. I've only ever been to one Grand Prix, and it was a V6. So really, does the sound make that much difference to you? If the sound is that big an issue, can you not just stick a YouTube video on of V10s next to the telly while you're watching the Grand Prix?
Oh, is that what we should do, though? We should all go to a racetrack and bring AirPods so that we can put on Ferrari.
Yeah, you know V12. How like electric cars, you can play engine sounds through the speakers on it. Maybe we should have that trackside.
Oh, God. Do you remember when we went to Le Mans, and I think it was 2007, and we had the Kangaroo TV, just before smartphones were there.
Yeah.
You could watch the race trackside on the little handheld device. You could have selectable sounds on those. So everybody gets their mobile phone and brings up the app, maybe the F1 TV app now, and you can put on different soundtracks. So you get your own custom soundtrack on your device. So if you want to make it sound like a tractor, you can either leave it off, frankly, or turn it on and have your own tractor sounds.
Exactly.
Or have it on the car so each team can decide what their sound is.
Oh no, do Hyundai not do that with the new electric cars? Like, it not only plays the...
You could have the Mercedes go around with a pop bang map.
Oh no, it's going to sound like a car.
Like every
sound
AMG
A45. Yeah, I mean, but honestly, I mean, beyond the sound, what does a V10 give you that you're not seeing from a V6 hybrid? But what does a V10 add to the racing? That's what I can't get my head around.
Weight and size. Wait, it removes the weight and size. Kind of, it's better from that aspect.
Okay. But the flip side of that is that they're only 33% efficient on fuel versus 50% efficient on the hybrids. Last time we had V10s, we had refueling though. So unless we're going to bring back refueling, you're going to have to increase the fuel tank sizes, which means you're going to have to make the cars bigger again than they currently are.
I'm okay with bringing back refueling because we've essentially done that in Formula One by mandating the tyres.
Refueling was awful.
You say that, but is that not essentially what we have simulated using the Pirelli tyres anyway now? Of we now have tyres that deliberately fade at certain points and we mandate that they've got to use different tyres in order to reduce...
I think you're giving Pirelli far too much credit there for what they're capable of.
I've just had a thought with refueling. We all know legendary American series fueling strategies. Andretti are coming to F1.
Oh, God. Andretti can't work out in IndyCar or IMSA when it's just an internal combustion engine. Can you imagine throwing in the hybrid as a variable and being like, right, go work that out? It'll be the first car to run out of fuel in Formula One in a very, very long time. I hate the question you asked there, Sim, and I hate it because I don't have an answer. What does it bring to the sport other than sound? But I feel like the sound is a big spectacle of it. It's a big part of it. It's one of the reasons that I think Formula E won't really take off any more than it has. I think it's stuck because it doesn't sound that interesting, and that's part of it, especially when you go to a racetrack. We went to a racetrack just the other day. Went into British GT at Donington, and I took a friend of mine who had never been to a race before, and her comment was, wow, it's loud, and wow, all these cars sound completely different. It was British GT, so it was GT3s and GT4s, and she absolutely loved the Aston Martin GT3 because it burbles on the downshift. It sounds like it's angry when it's braking, and it's just burbling, and even though it's got the same engine as the Mercedes GT3, the way that it's either mapped or the way the exhaust deals with it is different. So they had very different sounds. And she had the Lotuses and she was like, oh, they sound like they're screaming more than anything else. And I felt like the sound was a massive part of it. It wasn't just loud. It was overwhelming and it made it an event. And that's where I kind of feel like the modern F1 cars aren't.
So that brings me to my alternative to proposal to bringing back V10s. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
We bring back V10s.
Cool.
And V12s and V6s.
Right, okay. We're not going to be able to argue about this because this is what I was going to argue.
So the difference now to when V10s were originally around is there's a cost cap in Formula One.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a cost cap on developing engines. So for the new regs, I believe it's $250,000 a year or something like that. The engine manufacturers are allowed to spend a certain amount to develop their engines. If you've got a cost cap, why restrict the rules in other areas? Let's make it a Group C style formula. Mm-hmm. You tell the teams, you've got 200 megajoules of energy to get through a Grand Prix. You go and work out the best power unit for doing that. Because you're right, V10s do sound excellent, but they sound so much better when there's also a V12 or maybe a V6 or... You said the P1 hybrids were your favourite cars because you had, a V8 diesel, a V6 diesel, you had a V8 twin turbo, you had a inline 4 turbo or a V4 turbo in the Porsche. And it was just all those different engines made it so much better.
I agree with that. I think variety is important. Another anecdote from the weekend there was, so British GT sounded amazing because there was like 10 different types of car there. So every car went past and had its own personality. And then the Ginetta GT Championship cars went through. And as a single car, that car sounds great because it's got a big dirty V8 in it. So it kind of sounds like the old Corvette GT1s and GT2s did. But the problem was there was a grid of like 20 odd and they all sounded the same. So it actually became a bit of a drone more than anything else.
Mm.
And that, I think, is part of the problem. I'm all up for a variety of engines, without a doubt. And I actually think the hybrid system should be slightly smaller than what they currently are. There's a big push on the hybrids, and I get that from a road car manufacturer standpoint, but I also think that Formula One should divorce itself completely from road relevance and road car manufacturers rather than allow them to dictate the rules, partly because I don't think it's in the fans' interest and partly because I don't think road car manufacturers should be dictating rules when they've got such a history of abandoning the sport at a time when it's needed. See BMW, Honda, Toyota, and every other one, to be honest, apart from Ferrari, unless they're building an Indy car again.
And let's be fair, Mercedes, since they've returned, they've been steadfast as well.
Fair. Yep, fair.
And so they're getting on for 35 years now.
Yeah, I mean, how many things have Honda pulled out of F1 in the last decade?
I was going to say in the last year. I mean,
yeah, because I don't know if they still build the Red Bull powertrains or not. I genuinely have no idea.
I can't get my head around what's going on with that nonsense.
Because I think it's a Honda but with a Red Bull sticker, and we're going to change the sticker for a Ford later. And then we had McLaren Hondas for a while, and that didn't work out. And we had Honda Hondas for a while, and that didn't work out until we put Mercedes in the back of it and then won a world championship. So yeah, I'm not up for letting manufacturers dictate rules because they're only doing it for their own business interests, and I don't feel that's in the interest of the sport.
Agreed.
I've got an angle that I have half knowledge on to kind of speak about. Talk about road relevance. Now, a lot of manufacturers are finding issues with their EV sales, and kind of EVs aren't taking off how they wanted them to. Porsche scrapped a few kind of plans for electric 911s and the Caymans as such.
Can they scrap the EV Cayman, please? I want a Cayman. I just don't want it to be electric. And actually, can they get rid of the four-cylinder one as well? Because when I finally do upgrade to a Cayman, I don't want it to have the same number of cylinders as my Volkswagen Polo. That's offensive.
It's the same family, to be fair. But...
You're right, I've got a Cayman.
I know Porsche especially have looked into sustainable fuels a lot, and I think kind of the part of the discussion was if F1 like goes back to kind of pure internal combustion, then it's with sustainable fuels.
Correct.
Yeah. And I think that would be a huge benefit to everyone on the road. And it'd be interesting to know how the manufacturers would see that kind of for their cars going forward as well. If, you know, it's probably going to be on the road, it's most hybrids, I imagine, than anything. But that involves an internal combustion engine, so it needs to be sustainably fueled. And I think that would be actually quite exciting to see kind of the development that F1 could push with that by going to pure internal combustion. And it's probably the least exciting reason for it, but it's actually a very good one, I think.
Does the ACO not already do this?
Yeah, the ACO. WEC is run on 100%. I can't remember what it's called. It's not zero carbon or anything like that. It's CO2 that would already be released into the atmosphere by other means is captured, turned into fuel, and then released in via the cars.
Yeah.
So it's not adding carbon, but it's not carbon neutral, if that makes sense. It's, yeah.
And is it not something incredibly French, like it's waste extract from wine production?
Correct, yeah, that's what it is, yeah.
It's just fantastically French. I absolutely love it. So the only way that can be better is if it's cheese involved or something. Yeah, I'm completely up for that. The issue that I keep seeing discussed is when you discuss, for example, hydrogen fuel and stuff like that, and there seems to be a lot of people that are under the impression that that would be a nice traditional combustion engine. But a lot of the hydrogen talk is still fuel cell, which is just producing electricity in another way. Rather than storing it in a battery, you're storing it in the hydrogen and using some nice chemistry in order to produce the electricity. And that's got the same problem to me of it's not that interesting, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it needs the up-down bangy bits for me.
They're a big part of your life, Sim, aren't they, Sim?
And I think we both say that as people who have attempted to make Formula E part of our regular viewing. And Extreme E as well. I've really tried hard with that, despite Matt and I's attempt to go and watch it and being told, no, that you're not actually allowed to go and watch this sport. So, yeah, I would need a complete overhaul of the engine regulations. Like not just like the technical side, but the entire concept of why are we doing what we're doing? Because the whole thing needs a rebuild from the ground up, in my opinion. Because otherwise, if we keep down this route, give it 5 years and Alpine decide they're bored and Alpine.
This is Alpine's last year as an engine manufacturer.
Well, they certainly shouldn't get a vote in it then, should they?
They don't.
So who are the ones that are voting then? Mercedes, Ferrari,
Audi and Honda, I believe it is.
Do Honda count as the Red Bull powertrain?
No, though? So they're separate.
Aston Martin.
Yeah, Aston Martin, Honda, Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes, Audi, and then Cadillac don't get a vote because they're not coming in until 28. And Alpine have already announced they're leaving at the end of this year, and Mercedes will be powering the Alpine team from next season.
I forgot about that because it's so ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. So wait a minute. Aston Martin are powered by Honda despite the road cars being powered by Mercedes, and Alpine are going to be powered by Mercedes.
Yeah.
Well, that makes complete sense. I'm glad we cleared that up.
But I mean, it just comes back to let's just open the engine formula up and whoever wants to come in, you know, run what you're wrong. Would Toyota come in to you know, develop their hydrogen? They probably would. They've been pushing the ICO for God knows how long to go towards a hydrogen formula.
So how open would you have it? Would you have it as it doesn't matter? Like the rule is the engine needs to somehow power the vehicle, and however you want to do it, that's it.
Yeah, so you got your chassis regulations, okay? Your power unit engine needs to fit within the chassis rules. You've got a certain amount of energy. It's, I don't know, 100 megajoules an hour, 200 megajoules for a total Grand Prix. Go away, do what you want. I wouldn't mandate the amount of power units a season either. Like I say, there's a cost cap. The engines have a nominal value in the rules already. So, you know, if you want to use 24 engines a year, you know, one engine per race, great. But there's, what, 50 million of your budget cap gone. So if that's how you want to run it, that's fine. It's up to you.
I love the idea of trying to get a new engine every race and keep it under the cost cap. You'd be wedging in Ford Fiesta engines by the end of it to keep the price down. Just a turbocharger the size of Mars bolted onto the side of it. So would you have a maximum energy per race then, Group C style?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have that now anyway, don't they? You know, you can only use 100, I think it's 100 kilograms per hour is the maximum you can use, and 110 kilograms of fuel for the entire race, plus whatever it is for the hybrid as well. Is it 4 megajoules a lap or something like that you can do? So, yeah, I don't see why you just couldn't, you know. I don't want to say equivalence of technology because I didn't particularly like that. I wouldn't go as far as that the ACO did in the LMP1 era. I just say, yeah, energy allowance, go run what you're brung. It's Formula One. It doesn't need to be balanced. You do your best. If it's not good enough, you need to do better.
This idea is so insane, I don't actually have an answer for it. Because I suppose we're all familiar with the concept of you can stick a V6, a V8, a V10, or a V12 in a car and off you go. And we see that in WEC where there's just a mix of engines and all the rest of it. But I've never thought about things like a V12 naturally aspirated with no hybrid could also race against a hydrogen-powered car. That produced some interesting on-track action as the cars produce power in completely different ways. You'd have insane acceleration out of the hybrid car, similar to an electric car, I suppose.
Yeah.
But then it would top out really quickly. We used to see that with the LMP1s, didn't we? It would top out really early on the straights compared to even the LMP2s. That's a really interesting idea.
Would you need to recharge your electric hybrids as well in pit stops? Would you need to refill your hydrogen because you do an entire race on a V12 twin turbo with your fuel, you know, save time that way? I don't know. I just think it's really interesting. And, you know, I love racing for the on-track action, but I love it just as much for the technology battle. I just think that is something that would get my juices going.
Feels like something everyone's been missing for a while, actually, as well, the technology battle. I mean, you've got all the pettiness over mini DRS and flappy wings or whatever, but any kind of real big true innovation on that side of it.
They curtailed all that to try and save costs, didn't they? Which, you know, commendable. They need to save the teams from themselves. But F1's profitable now. And at the end of the day, there's a cost cap. Yeah. I'm still a big believer of all these, you know, rules about how long stuff has to last and all that sort of stuff. Just get rid of it as a cost cap. If you want to, you know, change wings every race or anything like that, you know, your gearbox every race, it's up to you. As long as you stay under 150 million a year, have at it.
It kind of does it itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, if you want to go testing every weekend, great. You've got to spend less than 150 million pounds a year to do your racing and testing.
I think you're onto something here for different reasons as well, because when you start opening up testing, it changes the discussion quite a bit, because then you start opening up. F1 is quite hostile to rookies at the moment. as we're saying, is like how we go back even 20 years and rookies used to spend half the season testing before they even got to a race. And now we are, the standard is higher than ever and we're expecting more of ever than rookies. And we burn through rookies at a hell of a rate. Liam Lawson. You know, it's not a particularly fair or, let's say, pleasant environment, I suppose, to be chucked into. And you can go, well, it's the pinnacle of the sport. But you know what? It's always been the pinnacle of the sport. It doesn't also need to be hostile. It can be the pinnacle and welcoming. So you open up testing and you get that. But then if you open up the ability to run as many gearboxes as you want and power units as you want, and you've just got to deal with the cost without needing to worry about that, then it means that you don't have ridiculous penalties anymore. Like, why is somebody being penalized? What, because they changed the gearbox? Try explaining that to a fan who's not a hardcore F1 fan. Why did he qualify first and starts 10th? Well, they changed his gearbox. And they'll be like, cool, what's a gearbox in this? And then you're down that rabbit hole of trying to explain the nonsense. So I think what you're talking about there actually ends up solving a lot of problems that F1 has, I'm not going to say created for itself, because all of these issues that we're talking about are for good reason.
They solved a problem that existed at the time.
Yeah, and now I think we need one of those kind of rethinks to go, now we've got layers of rules on top of each other, which are getting a bit much. Can we strip them out by changing something fundamentally? And the cost cap allows them to do that. Oh man, you're onto something.
So what you're saying is I should be running against MBS in the upcoming elections.
I was about to say, what we're saying is we should start our own racing series. That's what this is what I'm getting from this. What's the realistic chances of, actually, what is the vote? Because we've kind of gone on a tangent. The vote is bring back V10s.
Yeah,
which I'm pretty sure is also a podcast.
Yeah, I believe the official vote is introducing a new engine formula or delaying the change of engine formula and replacing it with V10s. I'm not entirely sure which one it is because I've not honestly given it that much thought because, one, I didn't think it had passed, and two, I think it's just a way of MBS trying to curry favour with fans who he's managed to piss off royally. Through other means.
Yeah, well, unpleasant people can be right every so often, it's just, but through pure chance.
To that extent, I do agree. One thing I did see was that his proposal for going to V10s was because he does not believe that engines should be a differentiator in Formula One. Yeah, the look on your faces says everything to that statement.
He's just a dick.
I mean, when you think about it, what did he grow up watching? He grew up watching 26 cars powered by a DFV and 2 powered by a Ferrari. So
it's just that. Okay, so he doesn't believe that engine should be a differentiator. So what he should be proposing there then is a spec engine. As in, rather than, yeah, I suppose we've kind of got a spec engine, but we don't do it because you still build your own. He's proposing essentially a spec engine. That will never fly with anybody ever. Like, nobody will go for that. But moving it to V10s doesn't actually change it to be less of a differentiator.
No.
Like, you're just going to have different V10s. Like, I don't understand the logic on that one.
I don't understand a lot of his logic, let's be honest.
The thing with this vote is, what I don't get is, it's an absolutely daft time to do it because there's going to be so much money sunk into this. And I think, as you said, Mercedes are against it because they're probably actually going to come up with a properly decent engine. It's the only reason Audi want to enter.
Yeah.
So, and it's so close that, yeah, it doesn't even make sense that there's a vote, to be honest. If it was like the 2028 or something like that, then maybe, yeah. But for 2026, I don't see kind of the reasoning behind it at all.
You're never going to get anybody voting for it other than Ferrari and Red Bull because their interests are not aligned with everybody else's. Everybody else has got different interests. That's never going to happen. But if F1 is going to get away from road relevance and smaller, more efficient engines, it probably has to do it sooner rather than later. Because by the time you get to the kind of late stage of this and you're fully down this route, it's kind of too late to change because that's what the sport's built around. So, like, in my opinion, Formula One needs to move away from road relevance and be more of a sport, similar to what sailing's done. The technology in sailing is no longer relevant to the shipping industry. It hasn't been for a couple of hundred years. That, in my opinion, is where Formula One should go. Same with horse racing. Like, horses were the mode of transport at some point, and then eventually they weren't the mode of transport, but they didn't get rid of horse racing because it was still interesting. So motorsport should move away from road relevance, because it is going to eventually be electric and things like that for the majority of people. Maybe not all, but the majority. I don't think that's the way F1 should be going. I think it should divorce itself from that. And yes, you will get some people that will argue then, well, road car manufacturers wouldn't want to be involved in. And I'm like, well, that's okay then, because we used to have lots of other engine manufacturers, and you would get them popping up as well. Gibson's over in WEC. We used to have Judd and things like that. Bring them back. I'm totally down for some random guy nailing together a V10 in a shed somewhere near Silverstone, because that's what Formula One used to be done, used to be about. And you can say, it's like, oh, you won't get that anymore. It's like, you would if you got rid of the expensive engines that only road car manufacturers could deal with. If you made it accessible to others, you could bet that Gibson would put a V8 in a Formula One car if they were allowed to put a V8 in a Formula One car.
How much road relevance is there in the actual F1 engines at the minute, though? Because isn't there is it the MGU-H, which is apparently a big box of black magic that makes energy that nobody can really kind of simplify?
The MGU-K, yeah.
The MGU-K, is it?
Yeah, but I mean, it will have some relevance, but I think F1's got down the route of getting it the wrong way round. Throughout motorsport history, what's been done in F1, Le Mans, IndyCar has trickled down to road cars rather than the other way around. F1 should be the breeding ground for the ideas. You know, we've all heard the stories of disc brakes. They're pretty common on pretty much every car now these days. They came around because Jaguar needed a better way of stopping their cars at Le Mans. Flappy paddle gearboxes, that was John Barnard fitting it to his Ferrari to improve gear shifts, and that mean the driver didn't need to take his hand off the steering wheel. You know, and you know, when they came in, what's the road relevance to them? Absolutely none. But these are things that are now standard as cars 20, 30, 40, 50 years later. And that's what F1 should be. It should be a proving ground for potential technologies in the future that will be relevant to the road. You know, not next year, 5 years' time, but in 10, 11, 12, 13 years' time.
There's also a discussion to be had on what the end point of these technologies are, because you can only be road relevant for so long before road cars kind of stop developing. Because what else do you really need to do to road cars? You can keep making them safer and things like that, but I don't know, like, I feel like there was a massive amount of development for road cars for the last 100 years, but you do get to the point of, we're just doing fine tweaks right now. There's no massive revolution in road cars in the last few years.
But is that because motorsport has become so restrictive?
Oh, you flipped that around. Oh, nice.
I was reading a great article today now, and a majority of electric cars these days have active aero on, something which is banned in pretty much every form of motorsport because it's seen as expensive and dangerous and all that. Yet, you know, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, whatever it is, you know, when it's on the motorway, it adjusts the angle of its flaps to make sure it's got the most efficient, drag-efficient shape while it's traveling along at 70 miles an hour versus when it's at 30 miles an hour to improve battery life.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a good discussion, that one. So have racing cars fallen behind road cars and technology? So at that point, we should just completely divorce them then, because they're just not relevant to each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great analogy. It is Formula One, you know, horse racing of transport now. Dave's looking very,
I like this. I know, it's like, I kind of feel like most of the series, Formula One included, are kind of flapping around a little bit, unsure what to do with the technology. You've got WRC's just dropped hybrids because it wasn't really adding anything other than cost and added danger and complexity. British Touring Cars has introduced it, and they've done it in quite a good way, but it's also the way that it's been done for the last 20 years, so it kind of doesn't count, and that they're using it as a boosts type system. And because it's British Touring Cars, you get a different number of boosts depending on where you qualify to try and make it more exciting, things like that. So typical British Touring Cars. Extreme E is dead and being replaced with Extreme H, which they insist...
Just to drop in there, Dave, BTCC have actually dropped the hybrid from this season.
Oh, Christ, I haven't even kept up with that. Okay, so the British Touring Car Championship hybrid is gone.
So they've gone to the 100% for sustainable fuels as well, because they believe it's better and more relevant.
That's quite funny because they were the only series really doing it right.
Right,
because
it
actually replaced some weird complex rules about tire compounds and things like that. So they actually did really well with it, to be fair. But again, that's just added cost at a time where it doesn't need cost. Extreme E is dead to be replaced by Extreme H, which they still insist has a 2025 calendar. I've seen no evidence of this. So I'm going to say Extreme H is dead on arrival until proven otherwise. World Rally Cross went all electric and that didn't go well. And now they've gone electric versus petrol, and they call it Battle of Technologies, I think. They've struggled the last couple of years. The start of their season was postponed, but now it's back because they've got a promoter. Swedish Touring Cars went all electric. That grid has dwindled quite dramatically. I'm not sure if that series is still alive anymore, if I'm honest. And Formula E, well, it exists. I believe when it was on pay TV in the UK, the viewing figures were approximately 400 people per race in the UK, which is obviously, that's nothing. That's a rounding error at this point. So like, I feel like all the series are desperately trying to make this happen, despite the evidence that it's not really what people want. And kind of ironically enough, British Touring Car did the best job with it and then still bid it. Like, it feels like it's being very forced by the series rather than asked for by the fans.
I think there's a big concern about optics, isn't there? And everybody wants to be seen to be doing the right thing environmentally and sustainably. And that almost takes precedent over the actual kind of entertainment value.
So I've always wondered about the optics because I agree optics is a problem, especially for like Volkswagen, for example, with the issues they've had over the past couple of decades. The optics should be tuned for the fans who actually want to watch it. And we are the fans that want to watch it, and all the current fans are the ones to watch it. If you turn Formula One electric to improve the optics, non-racing fans don't suddenly go, oh, turns out cars driving in circles is exciting. Let's watch it. So you're improving the optics for the people who are not your audience, but you're destroying the optics for the people who are your audience. So nobody wins in this. Now, I'm not a marketing expert. I've done one lesson in a marketing course recently, and it, funnily enough, was about audience. And this feels like they are appealing to people who are never going to watch it, whilst being unappealing to people who do want to watch it.
Until next time, when I tell you about my next idea of removing pit lane speed limits to improve the racing.
Fuck, are you serious? Wondered if we would accidentally live stream. I wonder if anybody would watch or listen to us actually live streaming. If somebody's listening to this right now and this makes it into the recording, let us know if you want to hear us live.